Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. Today I'm joined with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are we doing today?
I'm so good, Coach Steve. How are you?
I'm really well. I'm excited this week because this week is Challenge Weekly Show episode number 70. I think as we transition from the 60s into the 70s, is that the time when we start saying that we're old, or is that when we start saying that we're young again? Because, you know, we could either say that we're in the 70s, as in like the golden era of the 70s, or that we're 70 years old. So are we young, Nick, or are we getting old?
I reckon 70's still young.
70's still young.
Yeah. 70 is still young. So is 80. And 90 is just when you might have to start thinking about winding things down just a little bit. Not till you get to 100.
100 triple digits.
Yeah. So you're all good. You're only like 3/4 of the way through your life, really.
That's right. I think like as we age, you know, when you are 70, you really are a reflection of what you are currently doing, right? Like one of my first jobs, I was working at a swimming pool, right, with the YMCA. So I was a lifeguard standing out on the pool deck, and I used to do the morning shifts. So I started at like 5 a.m. standing, watching people swim. And at like 7 o'clock every morning on the dot would be the same group of, in the nicest way, oldies that would come in and do their laps. And I never knew, one, their names. They knew my name because I had a name badge on. And I never knew their age, but I knew all about them. They would tell me about their grandkids. They'd tell me about their life and all the things that they did because, you know, chat. And one day I asked them, I was like, oh, like, how old are you guys? And it was such a broad range of ages. And these people were so fit and so active and looked so young. And some of them were in their 70s, some were in their 80s. And every morning they'd rock up and they'd swim there, you know, like 30 odd laps of the pool and, you know, do their little exercises and go into like the hot tub and the sauna, then off they go. So I think there is an element of aging well, and I think exercise is the real fountain of youth, especially as we, you know, go into our twilight years.
Definitely. You are going to find me at a local council pool teaching water aerobics and lifting weights still. That's what I'm going to be doing. I already know. So
yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to be doing, and probably still just doing dabbling in some bodybuilding over 80s.
Hey, yeah. I think that category will be hitting it off soon.
Yeah, definitely. So, yep, that's me.
Now, Nick, last week was an exciting week. Last week was the launch week of our brand new M Challenge app. Okay, launch week of the M Challenge app, but the M Challenge hasn't started yet. So the M Challenge starts on the 11th of July, and we have our prep week starting on the 4th of July. So if you're sitting on the fence, not sure if you want to come and join us, sign up today. You can log into the app as of today. You can start accessing some of the cool features on our app, and then on the 4th of July, we'll be able to set up your training plan, set up your nutrition plan, and then on the 11th of July, we kick off our 12 weeks, 84 days of the first ever M Challenge. So it's exciting times over the next couple of weeks as we get ready for this challenge to begin.
Definitely. So you can chat to us on the forum now on the app. If you download the app, if you get the app, you can speak to us, and we are there answering questions.
So absolutely.
You want to ask us.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think some of those questions are going to make their way into this podcast here today. So if you have any questions for us, please reach out to us on the forum, or there's a link in the comments in the description of this podcast, and you'll be able to ask us a question there, and we'll be able to answer it in this podcast. Okay. Now,
fantastic.
Nick, just like any new platform, any app launch, we have faced a range of unforeseen challenges with our app, and we have worked towards improving and resolving some of those challenges. So some things over the past week that we've worked on and resolved is that we've had a few issues with the sign-up process, the payment process, the login process, and that's all nice and streamlined now, so that we've had a nice resolution through those steps. We have improved some of the linking between apps. So, you know, when you're actually on the M Challenge app, you might not have been able to click some of the buttons and the links on the app. So we've improved some of those features. We did have a few challenges with individuals around like password retrieval and payment confirmation. And we've gone and made some resolutions through that process there. And for our international audiences, we have opened up the challenge to a range of countries around the world, including places like India, the US, Canada. We are working on other areas around the world, such as parts of Europe at the moment. And we have resolved a challenge around the Google Fit sign-in. So if you're on Android, you're trying to link your app to Google Fit, we've now almost resolved that issue, and we're currently waiting for Google to authorize the new integration of Google Fit, which will allow you to connect your activity tracker to Google Fit, and then Google Fit speaks to the M Challenge app, and then you could join us on the Steps leaderboard, which has been quite competitive this week. And it's been amazing to see how active some of our challenge community members are.
Yeah, a bunch of animals, I tell you. Like, I'll do my early morning walk and I get up, you know, I do my walk at about 5, and there's already people on there that have done 6,000 steps. It's like, I'm not going to be able to beat you. I'll just tag along behind you. And sometimes I find myself to be third or fourth, maybe for about 20 minutes, and I'm all excited. So it's good fun.
Yeah, I know it's great. And I think it's both inspiring to see if you can get into the top 10 for a particular day on the steps leaderboard. Then also it can be eye-opening to see how active some people are. So if you are struggling to do, let's say, 5,000 steps a day, that's okay. We can work on, you know, getting you from 5,000, 6,000 steps. But if you open up that app every single day and you see people that are doing 10,000, 12,000, 15,000 steps a day, you know, you might get a little boost of motivation, being like, oh, well, geez, if this person, John Smith, is always doing over 15,000 steps a day, you know, oh, I can do it too, right? So I think that's the whole point of the Steps leaderboard, is that we can, you know, be a little bit competitive, use that, you know, inner human competitiveness to really help drive our goals here, which is to improve our body composition.
Yeah, that's right. That, like, it all comes back to, at the end of the day, your own goals and your own body composition. So don't take it too personally. There are some real walking machines out there. Yep. And also it might show you also just how active some people's jobs are, because there may be some shift workers in there that, you know, say nurses and things like that, that have walked the floor all night. You don't know. So very interesting to see different levels of activity for people.
Now, we are having a few people have some challenges around syncing their steps with Apple Health or Google Fit, and then also with the integration between third-party activity trackers and Apple Health or Google Fit. So just a few hot tips. So firstly, if you are trying to sync your third-party activity tracker, so I'm talking Garmin, Fitbit, Apple Health, Samsung watches, or any other brands out there, you may need to Google or search or maybe read the manual on how to connect or sync those products to Apple Health or Google Fit. Some of them require some manual setup, like you have to click a few things in the Apple Health or Google Fit. Others, there's a very poor connection between those third-party activity trackers and Google Health or Apple Fit, and you need to then download another third-party app, something like HealthSync, so that they can communicate to each other. Now, the way that the M Challenge app works is it just pulls information from Apple Health or Google Fit. So if you're having a little bit of challenges, some of those things might be a little bit outside the scope of the M Challenge app and what we can help with, you might need to go and, you know, maybe contact something like, Garmin support with some help on how to link your Garmin to Apple Health. Okay. Yeah. There is a little bit of a delay between the syncing of, let's say, Apple Health and the M Challenge app. The quickest way to have that sync work is to have both apps open at the same time. So if you open up the M Challenge app and Apple Health, there'll be an instant sync because both those apps are open at the moment. So they're both working, they're talking to each other. So if you're seeing that delay between those numbers, you might need to open up those two applications. And if you're seeing a delay between something like Garmin and Apple Health, you may benefit from opening up those two apps and they can talk to each other. Okay.
Do you know, I'll tell you something funny. I had never opened Apple Health in my life before because I've got my Garmin and whatever. But now I'm looking at all my data and I'm so excited for myself because I didn't realize that my phone knew that I'm doing 11,128 steps average since July 2021 to 2022. So a day. So how good is that?
That's like, crazy.
Yeah. I didn't realize that. See, look at this graph. Mm-hmm. Not, this is not for anyone other than you, Coach Steve, unless this becomes a visual podcast. But can you please pull this for our little reel?
I will.
But yes, so it's very exciting, actually, Apple Health. It's quite good just on its own. And I'm sure Google's version is the same. Yeah. So it's really good.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think it's interesting when we look at our data, our information objectively. So, you know, if you are looking at things like graphs and charts, and, you know, it's one way to be honest with ourselves. So if we're looking at our steps, we could say like, oh yeah, I do a lot of steps a day. And if I turn around and asked you and say, well, how many steps do you do? And you go, oh, well, it's enough. You might not be able to answer that question unless you look at the raw data. And if you have that in front of you, like Coach Nick has, and we go, Nick, how many steps did you do in 2021 to 2022? And you go, I averaged 11,000 steps per day, right? You got the data, you got the information. You can confidently say that.
Can you read this one? Sleep?
Sleep, average 8 hours, 17 minutes per night. Ooh.
Thank you.
Aren't you lucky?
And look at my heart rate. Thank you.
Average heart rate, 75 beats per minute.
No, 45.
45 beats. I don't know where I got 75 from. That's
I'm just thinking, what are you talking about? But yeah, so just in case you would like, you know, you need to know about my health.
You need to know about Nick's health.
My Apple health. But yeah, no, anyway, guys, so the fact is, on its own, regardless of what watches and other things you wear, there's some really interesting data in there, and you probably didn't even realize it was all being tracked. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Nick, if we put on our tinfoil hats, I'm sure many of us don't know what's being tracked about us, right?
Yeah. it's all very, very cool. So because it's just the integration of steps, don't stress too much about your device. Like maybe in the future, I'm not going to say for sure, but if we were to integrate other things from our devices into the app, then you might need to worry a little bit more, like calories and stuff. But at the moment, if you just get stepping and get counting, we're happy.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Now, look, Nick, talking about data, we've spoken a lot about data in the Challenge podcast over time. And one way we can look at it is through our steps on things like our devices or our activity trackers. Another way we can look at our data information is through something like a journal. And we have a journal system built into the M Challenge app. And the journal can be a great way for you to reflect on your journey. So you can write about things like, these are some of the challenges I'm facing. These are some of the wins that I've faced. You know, I've got my kid's birthday next weekend, and maybe you could write a little bit about it. Okay, when there's cake coming out, I'm going to cut the cake, but not put a piece of cake in front of me because I'm going to eat that cake. So you can maybe start to strategize on things that you're going to do to help you overcome challenges in the challenge. And you can do that through the journal. And it might be towards the end of the challenge, maybe you, let's say week 7, week 8, you might look back at your journal as a resource and go, okay, you know, these are some of the challenges that I've faced. If I was able to get through that in week 2, week 3, week 4, I can get through these last 4 weeks of the challenge. You know, other cool things in the journal is you could upload photos. So if you upload, let's say, daily photos or weekly photos, you might start to see a bit of a trend. And similar with things like your body weight. You know, we spoken a lot about the idea of weighing ourselves more regularly, trying to dissociate our maybe emotion to that number on the scales, because it is just a number on a scale. You know, we don't have any self-worth, you know, attached to that number. But if we start to see that number slowly come down or slowly go up, depending on our goal, or maybe the number stays the same, and then it might be really clear to us, hey, what I'm doing right now isn't working. My objective number isn't changing. My body weight, my body mass isn't changing. I'm not going down, not going up. That could help us in our decision-making progress. So use the journal, use it as a data collecting tool, and it can help us to make better decisions as we move through the challenge.
Absolutely. And look, if you've got real, real issues with putting your weight down, apart from working through it maybe at some point and asking yourself why, I figured out a little hack. You can just put 00 and you can still then do an entry. So I don't want your weight to be a reason why you don't use your journal at all. So if you want to do that, you can be 00.
No, it's a good tip.
It still lets you do it. But then maybe you can even transition from the day that you did 00 to the day that you set yourself free and just stood on that scale and didn't care.
Yep. I like it. Nick, I want to move on to our next segment here, where we are slowly going to transition our non-scale victory highlights to just our community highlights. So we've got a range of posts here from our community, and we're just going to speak a little bit about them. And these are posts that are found from our places like our Facebook social hub and on Instagram. So Nick, take us away, talk us through some of our community highlights this week, launch week of the M Challenge app.
All right. So we've got the first one, we've got Mel Cook. So her podcast is actually coming out at the end of this week as well. So that'll be good. She was in the top 10 in the most recent challenge that we completed. So Mel Cook knows things. So she says, I remember how I felt signing up for my first challenge, overwhelmed with all the information, worried I wouldn't be able to stick with it, worried I wouldn't get the results I was after, all normal feelings. But someone said to me during my second challenge, this is not about 12 weeks or getting in the top 50. This is about making sustainable lifestyle changes, meaning if you don't get there at the end of your first challenge, it just means your body isn't ready yet. So that's really a mindset tip, isn't it? And mindset is so important. And it does take work. You're not going to get your mindset perfect first up, and you're going to improve it as you go every time.
I like that. Yeah. And it really highlights that idea where, you know, you might sign up to the challenge the very first time, and that first time that you did it might be the first time that you have done a fitness thing, first time you've done a training program, first time you've done a nutrition plan. And that might be the kind of like initial boot camp of the fitness thing. And it might take, you know, the second challenge, the third challenge, the fourth challenge until you can actually make a significant change over the 12-week period. So, you know, if you are doing this challenge or you've done previous challenges and you didn't get the result that you wanted, it's okay. It might just mean that you're body isn't ready yet, or you're not ready yet. And as we continually focus on improving ourselves, we might be able to overcome that barrier and get the change that we're looking for.
Definitely. And yeah, don't stress, because the only progress that is bad is if you don't try anything at all.
That's right.
Okay, the next one is Bridie Lee. So Bridie, she says, I don't normally have a heck of a lot of time for cooking, so my meals have to be easy to prepare as well as healthy. Adjust your veggies. So she had a picture of a nice looking roast bunch of veggies, which I like, because it also had beetroot, which is a performance enhancer.
Anyway,
we like it. But anyway, adjust your veggies as you like. This one is potatoes, beetroot, pumpkin, and garlic. You can use carrots, parsnip, or onions as well. Cut them all into chunks about the same size. Cover with aluminium foil and bake at 180 in the oven for about 20 minutes. Uncover and bake for about 10 minutes until they start to brown off a bit. So we love cooking tips, and you can really find a lot of them. Everybody's really friendly and sharing in our community. And the best thing about the recipes, I think, over time, or the meals, I won't say recipes, the way that the meals are put together, is that they're really simple. So it might be something that you go, I didn't think of putting veggies together like that, or I didn't realize it was that easy, or I didn't think I'd like it, but that looks quite nice. And then you're off and running. So join our Facebook group if you haven't yet, and you'll be able to see quite a few different cooking tips from people that have done this before.
Yeah, I just like that photo that she posted. I think she was having like a lamb roast. Mm. And I think when you look at, let's say, vegetables as a like a whole, you know, like a simple roast vegetable, it doesn't need to be fancy. You can put in your favorite vegetables. It can be, you know, potatoes and pumpkins and carrot, right? Or you put in broccoli, or you could put in beetroot, right? Or parsnip, or whatever it is. Mm. And, you know, you could roast them a variety of different ways, like that be, you know, really long roast, really short roast. You could put a range of herbs and spices on them. And who doesn't love just a good old roast vegetable mix?
That's right. So, you know, when you get your plan and you're like, it says vegetables, think about it. It doesn't have to be sort of a steamed weird thing that you might have had when you were little and you didn't like. There are so many different ways of cooking vegetables and interacting with vegetables.
Good old vegetables.
I'm going to write a book, Interacting with Vegetables.
So if anyone's interested about beetroot, just talking super quickly, I won't dive into too much, but it's got a range of, I believe they're called nitrites in beetroot, and that is a nitric oxide booster, right? Meaning that it boosts up our the way that our oxygen is transported around our body and the blood flows, so that what it does is it can vasodilate our blood vessels, so meaning that blood flow is improved around our body. So it's a performance kind of enhancing, quote, superfood, because it is a compound that we actually put into lots of like pre-workouts, right, where it helps to promote blood flow around the body. So it is pretty cool, and you can even buy, you know, beetroot powder and mix it in and into water and drink it. So
that's what I used to do in my bottle when I was doing triathlons. Sometimes I'd forget and I'd be like, oh my gosh, something's wrong with me. When I went and weed and stuff, I'd be like, no, there's something really bad going on. And I'm like, oh, it's the beetroot. That's right. The beetroot. Yeah. That's too so much good. Information. But on this podcast, you get everything. You get all of us. So don't edit that. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. All right. Next, I've got Ben James. So Ben, he's very good at giving tips and tricks. So this one, preparing for your upcoming M challenge and not sure of what kind of goals to set. Pick something you actually want to accomplish, something measurable that you can chip away at for the duration of the challenge and something specific that you will have the focus on to achieve. Great examples I've seen over the years are to be able to do push-ups on your toes, full range of motion, pull-ups, bench press, deadlift or squat your body weight, fit into a particular item of clothing you have, prepare for an upcoming event like a wedding or holiday by losing a specific realistic number of kilos, or simply making it through the entire 12 weeks and submitting that after photo regardless of any hiccups along the way. So that's a really great little piece there on goal setting and realizing that it doesn't have to be such a huge goal. It can be something that you've always wanted to work on. You know, it doesn't have to be someone else's goal. It doesn't have to even be a looks related thing. It could start with the same thing as I did when I first went into the gym with my two kids in tow, little kids, just going, I just want to do a chin up. And yeah, that was all I wanted to do because I just wanted to be a badass. So that was it. And then look at me now. Look out, everybody. So, yeah, I like it.
No, I like it too. Yeah, I like the idea of, you know, something measurable, right? Like, yeah. You know, just to say something like, oh, I just want to get fit or lose a few kilos. That's one way to look at it. Or we can do it on the flip side and go, okay, well, how can you measure that or know that you've achieved that? You know, just to get fit, what does that mean? You know, I'll lose a few kilos. Well, how many, right? So if you did maybe a performance-based outcome, oh yeah, I want to squat my body weight or do a one full range of motion pull-up or maybe lose weight to a realistic number. Like, oh, okay, I'm currently 100 kilos. I want to get to 90 kilos, right? A realistic number, depending on your height and so on. You know, that can be a really powerful way to goal set and to visualize our challenge experience.
Yeah, and to stay on track as well, because that's a measurable goal that you can go, have I achieved it yet? No. And then the funny thing is once you start achieving one goal, you go, I'm going to do 10 pull-ups, you know, that kind of a thing. So it's something, it's a never-ending one too. So it's really good. I like it.
No, it's so good. Nick, I've got a few here. So the first one goes out to Mike Sierra, and he posted on the Facebook Social Hub, and I believe he's coming back to the challenge after a bit of time off. And he writes, hey all, pumped to get on board with this. I've done the challenges in the past, but never really stuck it out over the 12 weeks, either work, family, laziness, or some other reason or excuses popped up. After having my second child in April and have been off work and then getting hit with COVID in the last few days, I've jumped back on the scales and chucked on a good few extra kilos. So this challenge is going to be something special for me, I think. Time to really kick it into gear. And I like this one, mainly because I want to say, Mike, we see you, buddy. We're here, we support you, and I'm sure that our challenge community will keep you accountable as long as you want us to keep you accountable. So I'm going to invite you to continue to post your journey on our Facebook Social Hub, be interactive in our M Challenge app, ask us as many questions as you need to, and you know, lean on our community to support you with this next endeavor of your life, and understand that life, you know, it gets in the way sometimes. You know, you've got work, you've got family, you've got other responsibilities in your life, but hopefully the next 84 days will be something special that you can look back on and be proud of the effort that you've put into.
Definitely. And try and think of a strategy now, Mike, for when that thing comes up, that the reason or excuse that has stopped you last time, what are you going to do this time? Because it's going to come up again. So yeah. What are you going to do this time?
What
I invite you to ask yourself.
The next one here, Nick, I have, I saw this post and I had a little chuckle, and it goes to Elaine Hudson, right? And Elaine writes, I discovered one way to get on top of the steps leaderboard. Just after midnight, go to the toilet, right? And she posted a photo of the steps leaderboard. She was the only one on the steps leaderboard just after midnight. So when the system, you know, reset, and she had done 24 steps. And I love this one because, you know, she's found a way to, you know, maybe hack the system a little bit. And I hope that she was wearing an activity tracker and she didn't, you know, get up, grab her phone and walk to the toilet and you know, go to the toilet at midnight. So, you know, I like this because it was a cheeky way to look at, you know, the competitiveness of the STEPS leaderboard. And we have had a range of participants in our STEPS leaderboard. It's been really amazing to see how active some of our challenges are.
Yeah, she's not wrong. That's the way to do it, because honestly, that's pretty much the only time you're going to get up the top. There are some huge numbers.
Yeah. Which goes to my last community highlights this week, goes out to Sarah Peppers. And I saw this actually just last night. So there was Sunday night, about 8:30 p.m. And Sarah was on the top of the steps leaderboard with 44,469 steps, right? And I thought that was absolutely amazing. I don't know how you do 44,000 steps in a day. That's like, you know, maybe 8 hours of walking. So maybe she did one of those maybe events where you walk from, you know, here to here, and it's 30 kilometers or something like that. But either way, you know, I thought that was really cool, and I just wanted to highlight Sarah here.
Yeah, she probably did, because that's what it takes to do that. Or unless she's a shift worker and like a nurse or something, because that they must just never stop, like never 8 hours of just nonstop. So yeah, be aware of that as well, especially if you know, you might need to up your calories. You never know. So not everyone needs to be losing body fat as well. Some people need to eat more. So I don't know, Sarah. Don't know what your situation is, but well done.
Well done. Now, I just want to acknowledge that we know that you can go into places like Apple Health and you could manually adjust your steps. So if you are trying to be competitive and you want to kind of break the system, you can. I think the only thing is that you're really just cheating yourself. So if you want to, you know, maybe go to the top of the steps leaderboard and you put in that you did, you know, 100,000 steps in a day, you could. But, you know, that's not really achieving what, you know, the outcome of what we're trying to achieve here. So I want to invite you to be honest with yourself and don't go in and just, you know, hack the system, break the system, you know, because we're not really achieving anything powerful with that movement.
No, the only time in my device when I would ever do anything like that is when, say, my Garmin has gone flat when I'm on a walk and I know the amount of steps that is and I need it for my activities, like if I'm calculating absolutely everything to a T, that's where that comes in handy. And that's what that's for. If your phone goes flat or something and it all stops and you know you did another 3,000 that day, it's not for completely hacking the system and going to the top of the leaderboard, because there's no prizes for it. The only prize is your health.
That's right.
And we won't start giving prizes if we find that people are being naughty. No protein.
I love that. Nick, yeah. Let's move on to our next segment here, the Coach's Corner, where mm-hmm. we offer our tip for the week. So, Nick, take us away. What advice do you have for us?
All right. So I just was going to have a quick chat about learning to do less to achieve more when it comes to body composition or body recomposition. And I was going to say as a woman, just simply because I am one. So like I know what it's like to just want to do everything. But I mean, this applies to men as well, to be honest. But somebody had written about how this time they really want to lose fat and they really want to concentrate on doing that. So this was in the group. So I've just taken, somebody asked a question of what are you doing? And it sounded a little bit like what I used to do. So they said, I still teach group fitness, but only 5 classes a week and all body pump except for 1 RPM. Now, like that's such a group fitness person, because only 5 classes, that's 5 hours. So like that's 5 hours of weights, even though it's body pump, and you know, an hour of spin. So that's already 5 hours. And then if you add up your training, and then it's also 2 big rides, 3 runs, and so all of those things. So that's a lot of stuff. So think about that as a platform for then trying to start weight loss from there. When your body, if your body isn't losing weight doing those things, where do you start? What more can you actually add to that? So that's where you've got to try and think. Sometimes you need to actually peel it back and see what happens to your body, how it responds when you do less, because you actually want to get away with doing the least amount possible. I know I've spoken to you before, Coach Steve, and you've spoken to me about, the analogy of a gun. I know the gun is a naughty analogy, but, you know, firing all your bullets at once, you don't want to do that. You want to maybe think about, firstly, do you want to do it via more and more and more exercise or a little less food or both? But both should really come at the end in a big push. You don't want to chuck it all at once out there. So with this person, I would probably suggest, this is just an example, and this person's awesome and it's all good, but I would probably suggest that they're going to have to choose. And I think all of us have had to do this at one point or another in this group fitness lifestyle, going to have to choose between body composition or teaching these classes, because they're fun and they're awesome and they're actually great for cardiovascular health, but they make you fatigued. They then make you not want to walk or do anything else. So you're basically sedentary because you are so tired, let alone all the other stuff. And I'm not trying to diss them because they're awesome. I'm just saying, as one of the people who actually takes it on, it's like a pilot or a chef. They don't want to cook at home, you know, or fly, not at home. You know what I mean? So you've just got to be really mindful of that and go, okay, just say I took some of those out. And so if it's your pay, then maybe, you know, you go a bit lighter on the weights, or maybe you drop one class, that kind of a thing. Or some of the classes you can actually instruct, but you don't have to do, not all. But the thing is, what you need to do is actually decide, how am I going to do less in those times so then I can really push in the gym? So I used to think that I pushed hard in the gym after doing three or four spins, and I went in there and I'm like, I'm invincible because I could lift reasonably heavy. But I didn't know what was waiting for me on the other side when I actually dropped those things. So that's the thing. You never know how much better you can be, and then off you go. So this big myth that we have to do more and more and more, that's what the fitness industry sells you. And I think it's starting to turn around a little bit, but I think it's really, really important that we understand that we have to actually also set limits for ourselves if we're talking about body composition. I'm not talking about being a triathlete or a bike rider, or that's all cardio stuff and that's awesome and that's different, that's performance. But this one is about actual body composition, fat loss, and optimal conditions for that. So less is more for that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think sometimes we are in that maybe like 80s, 90s fitness aerobic mindset of like, oh, if I'm going to lose weight, I've just got to like do some more, you know, group fitness classes or go for another run, or just try to do more and more and more. Well, you're right. Like if your goal is, you know, for body composition, right? Body composition, it's the two parts of the conversation. We're trying to lose fat and build muscle. Difficult thing to try to do both, right? And sure, like, you know, doing exercise is a great way to expend energy. And as we expend energy, we tip the scales for weight loss to occur. Yeah, that can definitely happen. But when you start to ask a question of like, all right, you're losing weight, what mass are you losing? Are you losing muscle mass? Are you limiting your ability to gain muscle mass? Or are you really trying to focus on losing body fat? And it can be a tough conversation to have with yourself going, well, the activities I'm doing right now are limiting my ability to achieve my goal. And, you know, you're using the example of a group fitness instructor, but that could be someone who maybe is sitting on the top of our steps leaderboard right now. They do 30,000 steps a day, every single day, because they work in a warehouse, or they're on their feet all day. They're a nurse or something like that. And that really high step count can be the limiting factor in their ability to train really hard, right? So, you know, some of these things we can't manipulate. If this is the you're choosing to do, you might not be able to change that. But if you do have that ability to modify those environments, especially if this is your really strong passion, your really strong goal, yeah, like, you know, these are the conversations that we may need to have with ourselves.
Yeah, true. And the thing is, like with group fitness, if you're doing it because it's addictive, not the teaching side of it, but the other side of it, and you're like, I love it, I love the vibe, maybe just try and cut it back one or two. If your true goal is body composition, if it's community and fun and other stuff, then keep doing that, because everybody's got a different goal as well. Not everybody wants to be super 100% shredded or whatever it is. You know, no, that's not what everyone wants, and you don't have to want that either. You know, you might just want to look cool. That's great. You know what I mean?
Just want to look cool. I love it.
You know, the glasses emoji, sunglasses emoji. Yeah, I just want people to know. That's all. I just want them to know.
Just know. Nick.
Yeah.
My tip this week starts with a story. Okay, story time with Steve. It's becoming a thing, Nick. You know, my son, 9 months old, starting to, you know, understand some of the things that I'm saying. By understand, he just knows that when dad's talking to him and when dad's not talking to him. But, you know, story time is becoming a thing. And this is the story of dinner time with my son, George. So again, my son is 9 months old. So if you have a child and you remember the time when they were 9 months old, you probably know what I'm talking about here, where I, the adult in the situation, need my son, my child, my kind of toddler, you know, he's kind of standing up now and maybe, you know, taking a few side steps. What is that the definition of a toddler? Someone who's learning to walk. Anyway, so I, the adult, have my child in front of me and I know what's good for him, right? I have the cognitive planning and, you know, intelligence sometimes to know what's good for him. I know that he needs to eat. I know that he needs to eat so that he has enough food in his stomach so that he can sleep, right? So here I am almost fighting with him, trying to get food in his mouth, but he's, you know, doesn't want to do that. He wants to go and play. He wants to crawl on the floor. He wants to, you know, chase the dog. He wants to, you know, that's not what he wants to do. So he ends up like whacking the spoon. He's playing around, doing all the crazy things. Okay. So what I ended up doing was trying to find ways to make it fun and easy for him. So, you know, I might put some of the food in front of him. He looks at it, he plays with it for a minute or two, and then, you know, he grabs it and wants to put it in his mouth. Okay, great. Success. I tried the old aeroplane game, you know, aeroplane in the mouth. That was a bit of a success too. I even tried to, in the nicest way, weaponize my dog. So I'll grab my dog, put it on my lap, right? So that he's distracted by the dog, as in my son George is distracted by the dog. And then, you know, that's when I get the spoon into his mouth. So, you know, I, the adult, know what's good for my son. And he, the toddler, just wants to go and play and have fun. And I'm trying my best to make it easy for him to do the good thing. Okay. Now, what the hell does this have to do with the challenge? Okay. So I just want you to take a moment to acknowledge that inside all of us, you listening to this, you Coach Nick, me Coach Steve, we all have our internal adult. We have that internal planner, that internal intelligent person who knows what's good for us. We all have that voice inside of us that knows that, hey, we need to get up off the couch. We need to, you know, our alarm's getting off. We need to get out of bed so we can get ready to go to work. We know that we need to, you know, not sit on the couch and scroll through TikTok or Instagram reels. We know that we should be drinking more water. We know that we should be eating these vegetables. We know these things, right? But then we also have this delicate toddler inside of us, right? This 9-month-old little baby inside of us that wants things to be easy. They want things to be fun. We don't want to be, you know, we don't want to sit down and eat this food right now. We want to go and play. We want to go play with the dog. We want to be out of this high chair, right? We want to make things easy and fun, okay? So my tip this week for you is to acknowledge the balance of power inside you, that you have your inner adult and you have your inner toddler. And spending too much time with either one of those two, like, you know, identities as you would in the driver's seat of you can be problematic, okay? So if your inner adult is driving the show all the time, right? That can be a problem. You're not having any fun. You're just being a bit of a robot. You're just being too, you're not being fun about anything. And, you know, that may be problematic in the challenge. If your inner adult takes over, tries to have everything regimented and no fun, you're not going to last very long in the challenge. Okay. The joy can very quickly go away and that can lead to, you know, week two, week three dropouts that we see. And on the flip side, if we let our toddler take over where, you know, we don't want to go for a walk to get our steps up. We don't want to do our meal prep. We don't want to, eat this chicken broccoli rice dinner. We want to have a Kit Kat and a candy bar or something like that for dinner. Our inner toddler coming out, that can be problematic as well. But how can we get a nice working, a symbiotic relationship between our adult and our child and our little toddler in our brain? Well, I want to invite you to find ways to find joy in the challenge. Find ways to make it easier for you to do the challenge. Okay, so an example around food. If it's really easy for you to eat food that's in front of you, okay, you've got like a chocolate bar in front of you, and you know that if that chocolate bar is staring at you in the eyes going, hey, eat me, you're gonna eat it, right? Like a toddler, if I put something in front of my son's on his high chair, I put something in front of him, he's gonna eat it regardless of what it is. He's gonna grab it and put it in his mouth. It could be some fluff, it could be a little biscuit, it could be a cookie, it could be his dinner. He's gonna grab it, he's gonna try to put it in his mouth. So can you modify your environment so that you don't have those temptations in front of you, right? So you're managing your inner toddler. But then could you put other things in front of your toddler to make it easy? Like, you know, could you put, let's say, like a small set of dumbbells in your living room, So when you are watching TV, you're in a toddler's there watching TV and there's an ad that comes on TV and you're like, oh, I don't want to watch this ad. I want to do something else. There's the dumbbells right there. You grab them, you do some bicep curls, right? So is there a way you can make that fun? Is there a way that you can make you know, your training fun where you find the joy again in your training? Maybe you do, you know, not to be too contrast to what Nick was saying about group fitness, you know, maybe you've been training a certain way for a really long time. Maybe you go join a group fitness class, maybe something fun. Maybe you go join a boot camp or a sport or something like, you know, a CrossFit or something, you know, competitive where it's like, hey, this is really fun again. So you are supporting that inner toddler, letting that toddler have its time. But then you also let the adult in you have your time as well. So that's my tip of the week, acknowledging that both of those avatars live in you. And it's only when we get a balance between those two that we can be successful in what we're trying to achieve.
Definitely. And don't get me wrong, I made my living out of group fitness for so many years. I love it. It's joyous. It started me off in sports. It's the vibe. It's great. It's just when it comes down to nitty-gritty body composition. But like, if we're just having fun like a child or being sensible about our health and try to improve ourselves like an adult, bang on.
Bang on.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. Nick, let's move on to the final segment in the Challenge Weekly Show where we answer some questions from our community. And some of these questions have come from the forum on the M Challenge app. Some of them have come from our Facebook social hub. And some of them have come through directly asking us a question via the links in the description of this podcast. So if you have a question for us, reach out to us on the forum. It's probably the quickest way to contact us. And if you want us to answer a specific question on this podcast, you can ask us a question in that link in the description below. But first question here, Nick, and you can answer this one, which is, I want to drop 10 kilos and I don't really want to overcomplicate it. Where do I start? Okay.
Well, that's an interesting question. It's funny. It takes us back to the child versus adult conversation that we were talking about that you were just saying. But the thing is, if I go back to, say, after a year at uni when I was just going crazy with the beers and the pizzas and all that sort of stuff. And I was in a news agency, working in a news agency, and I found a little card on a magazine, because magazines were cool back then, that said, here is a free voucher for a month to a gym that my dad was actually working at part-time doing stuff, and mum and dad went there. So I just ended up going in the car with them and joining the gym. So the point of that is I didn't know what I was doing there. Dad showed me a few weights, some, I think it was concentration curls or something, random stuff. And then I would go on the stepper with my mum. And I didn't even cut out the beers. That's because I was young, you know, I still needed the beers. But I just started to do a few more walks around the block. And I remember for some reason I decided to have, instead of all the other stuff that I was having, two wholemeal sandwiches for lunch with capsicum dip and salad and tuna. And that was it. But it was obviously an improvement calorie-wise than what I was doing, because I just started to drop weight and felt really good. So my point of that is, without overcomplicating it, it's sort of like, how can you make some options healthier of what you're already doing? Because whenever I speak to anyone that wants to, you know, drop fat, they don't want to really change their entire life at first. So, for example, just say you love going through the Macca's drive-thru. I'm not trying to label a brand, but just say you do that. And you usually get a McMuffin and a hash brown and a latte. How could you change that order so it might be a bit better for you? You could go a long black. And if you like the creaminess or something, you could get a sweetener that's sort of something like that, an artificial sweetener. And then you could have some eggs in a box or some grilled chicken. I know that sounds weird, but I'm just saying little swaps are where you first start, as well as just getting those steps. So I would say to this person, swaps and steps, that's your first little bit. And I reckon that that's, just say you haven't done much and this is your first time doing anything or for a long time, I reckon that's a good 5 kilos, see you later, just with swaps and steps.
I like that, swaps and steps.
Yeah.
That one, SS.
SS, and that's actually Shane's initials, Shane Smith, husband. Shane Smith is drive-through man. But he's made some swaps. Actually, this is a real story, Coach Steve. I'm not even saying it for the brand, but I made him swap his one of the muffins that he has in the mornings for a cookie, a Max's cookie, and he loves it. So it's really good because it's calorie controlled and he loves those. So he's very happy. So that's just Shane's little swap. And you watch him drop 10 kilos just like that.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
And he does his walks too. So Shane's good like that. So there you go. And he's losing weight and feeling great.
Go Shane. Hashtag be like Shane.
Exactly.
Nick, next question here. A little bit paraphrased from our Facebook social hub, a bit of a longer question. And the question is, my shift times can be ridiculously long and I find I easily go half a day without even thinking about food. When I leave work, I automatically feel hungry and so I generally gravitate towards the poor choices, fast, high fat, bad carbs, or worse, sugar to get me through until I can cook something. Does anyone have any ideas on how to retrain my brain to eat regularly within portion and not feel sick or heavy? Okay. Ooh, big one. Let's break it down. Firstly, there's nothing wrong with periods of fasting. Okay. So I think in maybe a decade or so ago and even prior, maybe golden era of bodybuilding, we used to think, oh, I need to eat every 2 or 3 hours because, I have to. Right? That's the only way I can lose weight. I've got to eat, 7 meals a day or 14 meals a day or anything crazy like that. And here I'm telling you is that you don't have to. You know, if you do go through the whole day without eating, there's nothing particularly bad about that. And we shouldn't fear any time between meals or any periods of fasting. Okay, so that's the first thing I just want to say. Next thing is to consider our language around hunger and then acknowledge maybe habits and the cues around our habits, okay? So for talking about our language, if you go and leave work and you say, oh man, I am starving, I can eat a horse, Jesus Christ, I'm gonna die if I don't eat something right now, that's really strong language. And as soon as you say those words to yourself or even start to think those words, that has a certain response as attached to that language. So if you say something like, oh geez, if I don't eat something, I think I'm gonna like shrivel up and die, okay, when you go and actually put food in front of you, you are going to eat like you are about to die, right? But if you said something and changed the language, oh, I'm a little bit peckish, or I could nibble on something right now, that kind of changes our response to that. And even though you are the same level of hunger, you just change the language, you overrode your like mentality around it. And you go, well, yeah, when you do have food in front of you, you might just take a few bites. Maybe you only put yourself a small portion. And that can change our response to food around that, okay? Talking about habits, it sounds like when you leave work, that's a cue for your brain to go, well, I'm hungry right now. It's my cue, and the habit is to seek food. So maybe that's a great time to eat, okay? So, which leads to this third point, right, around the environment around work, okay? So let's say you work at, a certain location. We'll call that location B. Your home is location A. So you need to now, you've gone from A to B, you've gone to work, and now you have to go from location B to A. Maybe your pathway home from work to home, location B to A, that path might not be supportive to your goal. Okay. So if you are hungry, your cue in your brain is go, I leave work, got to eat, right? That's what your brain is thinking. I've left work, I've got to eat. You drive home, you drive past, let's say the Macca's drive-through again. You bet that Macca's drive-through looks more and more tempting every time you drive past it. And that comes down to our environment, because there's only so long where you kind of make that association. Oh, I'm hungry. I drive home down this road, easy street. You drive down easy street and there's a Macca's there. I'm going to turn into Macca's. And that becomes a really easy system for you to do. So your toddler takes over, right? So we need to have that adult in us to kind of override that toddler going, okay, well, can I change the direction I go home so I don't drive past the McDonald's? Or do I prepare a meal for when I finish work? That's my routine now. I finish work, clock off, I sit in the staff room. At the end of the day, maybe you can, maybe you can't, maybe you sit in your car, I don't know the logistics around that, where maybe you can have that meal once you finish work in your car. So when you do drive home, you're like, oh, I'm not hungry anymore. I drive past that Macca's, give it a big smile, being, haha, don't need you today because you've just eaten a meal, okay? So there's some things to consider. Now, if the question was more about, when I eat something, I feel really heavy, Okay. You know, here are some other tips. Okay. So firstly, consider what we call kind of light meals, not so much the weight of them, but they're when you go to a restaurant, you'll see light meals, mostly things like salads. Okay. So, you know, if you are feeling really heavy after certain meals, you may benefit from having a mixture of a salad mix, maybe not lettuce, because that's, you know, basically the new avocado these days, right? But you can have a salad mix, maybe with some roast chicken. Maybe you can go to a Coles on the way home and you get a bag of pre-made salad and a roast chicken, and maybe you can put that together. Great. It's a nice light meal, and that may leave you less heavy, less sick, less irritable in your digestive system. Next thing to consider is fruit. So with fruit, it really has a really high hydration level. So if you consume fruit, a lot of that one gets digested really easily, but then two makes you hydrated. So that can help you to feel light after you eat. Third thing to consider would be other dietary factors. So if you are feeling really heavy after certain foods, you may want to investigate things like food sensitivities, or even trial something like a FODMAPS diet. There's a really cool app launched by Monash Health, which walks you through a FODMAPS diet. And as you eat certain foods, you can put little ratings, like a little smiley face or an unhappy face, and can help you to diagnose what foods might be triggering any, you know, digestive or bowel related symptoms. So maybe you find out that, let's say, capsicum is what triggers you. So you may benefit from avoiding a food like capsicum. Okay, so the main summary for this individual would be that the adult needs to take over in this situation with you. There's nothing wrong with periods of fasting. Even more specifically, where this user has said that, you know, I look for high fat food. There's nothing wrong with high fat food. Bad carbs. What are bad carbs? I don't know. There's no such thing as good or bad carbs. They're carbs. And even sugar. So, like, you know, when we're talking about sugar, okay, it might not be good for our health, but for weight loss goals, you know, sugar doesn't really matter if you consume sugar or not. It ultimately comes down to the total caloric content of those foods. So that's the first thing to consider. Second, think about the language you use around food, how hungry you really are. Acknowledge the habits and the cues that are related to that, and then think about your environment. So how easy or how difficult are you making that food behavior? Right? So are you making it really easy to drive through the drive-through every day, or are you adding some friction in that so that you can maybe drive past the drive-through, maybe go a different way home? Okay.
Yeah. It sounds like also with that heavy feeling, it sounds like you're just delaying the heavy feeling anyway for when you eat all your meals in the one go at the end of the day anyway. So it's not like that feeling's being avoided. It just sounds like you're used to having that feeling after work. So, yeah, spread it out, I would say. But, yeah, really good.
Next question here, Nick, comes from the forum.
Mm.
And the question is, what's the role of steps and NEAT when you are eating in a surplus and trying to gain weight and muscle? Are they still as high of a priority as when you're eating in a deficit to lose weight?
Right. Well, isn't it ironic that you actually probably feel like doing them more when you are in a surplus? But in terms of your goals, well, if you think about it, they're a tool that we would use to expend more energy. And what we want to do when we are growing muscle is we want to conserve our energy to use in the gym to grow muscle. And we don't really want to. It doesn't mean we sit there like a big fat rock. It just means that we don't really want to be prioritizing, you know, doing, say, like 15,000 steps a day as part of our routine in order to gain muscle. That's what we need to separate it from. You can do it, but it is not going to play a role in you gaining muscle. So I would say the role of steps and NEAT when you are eating in a surplus and trying to gain muscle is minimal. I would say do it for cardiovascular health or for mental health, because there's a lot to be said for getting outside and stepping, but don't do it as a tool to gain muscle, because that won't happen.
I like that. Quick and easy. Yeah, it's much lower priority, our steps, but you're right. We don't want to just be a fat rock, as we say.
I don't even know what that is, but we don't want to be.
We want to be like, you know, Dwayne Johnson, a good rock.
Yeah, that's right.
And be focusing on our steps mainly for our overall health. And
not like the rock emoji. There is one, you've seen it.
That's the rock emoji.
Well, there's a rock emoji. I'll see if I can. You start answering your next question and I'll find it.
Yes. So, just to highlight a good step range if your goal is muscle building is, you know, maybe let's say that 5,000 to 10,000 steps, pushing up to maybe that 15,000 step limit. If you're doing beyond that 15,000 step, it may be an interference with our goal to build muscle. Is it bad if we do more steps? No. Is it bad if our job supports a high step count? No. But, you know, similar to what Nick's coach's corner tip was, is that that might be the limiting factor in your ability to build muscle. So if you are someone that defines themselves as a, quote, hard gainer, or maybe you quote yourself as an ectomorph or something where you, I just never put on weight. Well, maybe it's because you have a really high step count. You're really physically active. You have a really high NEAT, which is a bit conducive to the goal to build muscle and to put on body weight.
Yeah. And the other thing is if you're shooting all your bullets at once as well, then when you do want to lose body fat, how many steps are you going to have to actually do to do that? I mean, you can drop your calories, but then, with the energy out in that way, you will have to do more than 15 if you're already doing 15 and feeling crap too. So this is the rock emoji. I think it's Stonehenge.
Yeah, okay. The rock emoji, love it. The last thing I'd say about the role of steps and NEAT is that if we are doing more steps, that means that we do have a bigger budget for our food intake. So if you are trying to gain weight, it can be a bit problematic long term, because let's say like myself, you know, I'm going on about 105 kilos these days. I've successfully put on some mass, great, happy days. But if I was to do lots and lots of steps, let's say 20, 25,000 steps, I would be needing to consume, you know, close to 4,000 calories, maybe even more than that, of energy to try to maintain and continue to build muscle. And it reaches a tipping point where you struggle to consume that much food. Okay, so it becomes more difficult. And I'm, you know, speaking to some mostly guys, honestly, speaking to some like bigger guys who are trying to put on more mass, how difficult it is to go through a eating phase of gaining muscle versus an eating phase of trying to lose body fat. So if you are in that camp where you are trying to build muscle and gain weight, it can be more difficult because you have to eat more if you are having a higher physical activity level.
Mm.
Nick, final question here is insights to correct range of motion. Okay. My typical range of motion is to parallel, as in, for example, when I bench press, I go down until my elbows are in line with my chest, not all the way down until the bar hits my chest. What's the best approach? Okay, so this question is probably asking about, how much range of motion is a good idea. And I believe the broader conversation of this question was that this individual had a larger frame and that they needed to move the load a large range of motion just because of their long limbs. Okay, so for example, let's say myself, I'm 6 foot, so 183 centimeters, and I have a good friend of mine who's a good maybe like head shorter than me. Okay, he's a big ball of muscle and he squats like a truck, right? So, you know, I've watched the guy squat 260 kilos and deadlift 300 kilos, strong dude. But because he's shorter, we make fun of him because, you know, you make fun of your mates, right? And you go, well, it's because you're shorter, the bar has to move a shorter distance than me, who's taller, right? So, you know, it is all relative for each individual. So let's say this individual in particular, what's the best approach to strength training if you are of a larger stature? And I think it's the same principle to any stature where we want to be training at the largest range of motion that we're comfortable with. Okay, so let's take this bench press as an example. I don't know why we're choosing to like stop when the elbows are in line with our chest. We don't know if it's a range of motion issue. Maybe the shoulders just don't feel comfortable as they, you know, move past the body, or maybe the chest is really tight. It doesn't allow it. Or maybe there's another limiting factor such as, you know, equipment issue where, okay, I just can't get the bar down any lower because the, you know, the plates hit the rack or the bench or my elbows hit this or something like that. Okay. So that's the first thing that we want to acknowledge. The main principle is that we want to be training mostly at the largest range of motion we can within comfort before, you know, any significant pain starts to set on. So let's take a bench press. We want to be lowering that bar as far as we can down to our chest so that we get a big stretch through our pecs. And I spoke a little bit about hypertrophy tips. Gosh, we've been close to maybe 10 episodes ago where I spoke about the stretch mediated hypertrophy response, where we know that the muscles, as it gets trained in longer muscle lengths, have a really high level of tension placed on that muscle, which triggers what's called mechanoreceptors in a muscle. And that mechanoreceptor is what triggers a cascade of reactions to help muscles grow. Okay. So what we want is to actually stretch our muscle as we are going through our reps, okay? So with our chest, if we're doing a bench press, we want that bar to go all the way to our chest. And if anything, a bench press may not be the best chest exercise for hypertrophy because you're limited because the bar can only go to your chest. Whereas if you use something like dumbbells, you can probably go a little bit further and get even a bigger stretch of your pecs. And then as you go to press, you can actually bring those dumbbells closer together as you get a full contraction. So the bench press may not be the best exercise for you know, a full complete hypertrophy of the pec muscle, but really great for mid-range strength and really powerful strength builder of upper body strength, okay? So my advice for this individual and for anybody listening is to look for ways to take the muscle, the target muscle, through as large of a range of motion as you can that the exercise allows and that your comfort and your body allows. And you'll find that over time, if mobility is the limiting factor, as you practice going through larger ranges of motion, you can go a little bit further. So let's say a squat, as you practice going deeper and deeper, you'll find over the course of, you know, days, weeks, months, years, that you can go deeper and deeper with your squat as you feel more comfortable, more safe, more balanced to go deeper in that squat. You get even more of a stretch in your quads. And as you stretch your quads more and more, geez, that's when the quads really turn into little Christmas hams. And that's when you have to buy new shorts to fill them out again. So yeah, full range of motion, get it going. And let's get a good pump out of that.
Full range of motion, be there.
Be there, do it. Go.
Be there or be square.
Yeah, and I spoke about it just even last week about, you know, strange approaches that I've been taking to my training where I'm finding more ways to get more range of motion. And on some machines, you know, I would add extra handles onto machines or, you know, roll up exercise mats or towels and, you know, place them in different parts of my body to get more of a stretch on places like my hamstrings and such. So as you kind of understand that principle and think, okay, how can I stretch that the muscle more and more? That's when you get like a real crazy pump. You get to enjoy the DOMS again. And you, it may be a little bit humbling because you might not be able to lift as much. But it gets really high stimulus, which is what we're really focusing on. We're trying to get as big of a stimulus as we can to a muscle with the limited or minimal amount of physical stress that we can place on our joints and our nervous system. Okay. And that's the big secret around bodybuilding or for hypertrophy and building muscle.
Yes. So unless you're a power lifter as well, then that's a whole different conversation.
Different conversation. And I think, you know, just quickly around powerlifting, if you're if that's your sport and you're doing bench press for powerlifting, you know, the parameters of the sport is that the bar needs to go to your chest. So if you are stopping when your elbows are parallel with your chest, maybe at like, you know, your elbows are 90 degrees, you're not abiding by the rules of the sport. So, you know, talking about specificity, if you want to compete in your sport, you would benefit from doing exercises that help that sport. So for the bench press, you are going to want to train most of your bench press to competition standards where it's down to your chest. Yeah, maybe you might add in elements of like block presses or pin presses or floor presses and things like that to help certain elements of the pressing. But that shouldn't be the bulk of your bench press work.
Awesome.
Nick.
Yes. Let's
wrap it up there for episode number 70 of the Challenge Weekly Show. If you've enjoyed this episode, check out the 69 other episodes of the Challenge Weekly Show, and we'll catch you next week for episode number 71.
Thanks, guys. See you.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. If you like the show, share it with a friend.
Or leave us a review on iTunes to spread the good word. See you next time.